This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
There were at least original copies of the letters that were written in. That's one of the ways that you know. But the other is that I believe that one of the ways in which her connection with the latter was revealed was that she was a subscriber to it.
Just going back just a little bit to something that you mentioned, queer beer, and then you also in our pre-interview talked about the short stories that were anonymous, and could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. This is in terms of the evolution of her writing and her understanding of her own sexual preference and homosexuality. And she began to write an essay in 1955 on homosexuality, but she only wrote a few pages and then threw them away because they frightened her. She talks about this later in this queer beer essay. But it was the beginnings of her observations of gay people. She lived across the street from a club that was frequented by gay people. This was in Greenwich Village. And she wrote about, you know, seeing all kinds of people going in there, everybody that you wouldn't necessarily know or think was gay. So she had begun to observe. Now, why she was consumed and interested in this, and she does say that she was utterly uninvolved, she said, but very much interested in this.
Well, much as I hate to terminate this rebroadcast of Out FM from 11 o'clock this morning, it's 12:01. You're tuned to listener-sponsored non-commercial WBAI in New York, and that ends the scheduled time and a little bit more for that broadcast. We'll have an announcement or two, and then our Monday night overnight lineup, starting with Night Shift with Mike Sargent and all the crew from 12 until 2. At 2 o'clock, Tony Short, Person to Person, and at 4 a.m., Max Schmid with a Gene Shepherd special. So stay tuned to WBAI 99.5 FM.
There's a motion on the floor that the WBAI organization board.
I think this is out of order.
I'm opposed.
I'd like to amend it.
And what's the motion?
The next meeting of the newly elected WBAI local station board will be convened on Wednesday, May 21st at 7 p.m.
It will take place at DC 1707 at 75 Varick Street, just north of Canal on the 14th floor.
Take the A, C, E, or number 1 train to Canal Street. Bring a photo ID to enter the building.
It's wheelchair accessible. Please come to join in public comment.
Could we hear the motion from the committee reread again?
Again, that's Wednesday, May 21st, 7 p.m. at DC 1707, 75 Varick Street on the 14th floor.
All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. All opposed? 3. Okay, that carries.
Hello, WBAI family. It's that time again. WBAI will conduct its Spring Fun Drive on Wednesday, May 7th, starting at 7 a.m. through Saturday, May 31st. And as always, we really need you to help by answering phones and taking pledges. You do have to let us know in advance when you are coming so we can register your name with lobby staff. To let us know during the day, please call 212-209-2800. That's 212-209-2800 between the hours of 9 to 1 or 2 to 5 p.m. After hours, please call 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. We look forward to, once again, working with you to keep your Peace and Justice radio station alive.
Yes, but you love me.
Night Shift again. I'll be damn late.
And most of you are with someone.
Feels like
I wish they'd hurry up with that transmission. I wanted to find it. I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up will just rekindle your will to live.
Qu'est-ce que tu penses? Qu'est-ce que tu penses? tuned to listen to sponsored radio. WBAI. Web at WBAI.org. And this is Night Shift, and we're going to have a very special film-based Night Shift marathon show. This weekend I saw something that I think most people are anxiously awaiting. I'm going to talk about that. We've got something to give away in regards to that. We're going to have a director and the star of his latest film. We're going to be talking about why you might want to give to WBAI and Night Shift, and what is of value, and about expressing yourself. Here. On Night Shift. Now, there's a piece of music that, to me, you can only listen to this at night. And maybe you're driving around the city, listening to Night Shift.
How long has it been since you've slept?
I don't know. Fine. I never seem to get tired. But I know I haven't slept since this thing began.
damn thing halfway around the world.
Yeah, I'm getting pretty sick of you.
Yes, but you love me.
Night shift again. I'll be damn late.
I'm talking about it, and I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I know.
Consuelo, they're not human. It's an invisible barrier. Keeps anyone from getting out. It's designed to keep me inside, but it keeps everyone else in too. I'm sorry.
You are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM, and this is Night Shift. And as I had mentioned earlier, I got to see a film that's much anticipated right now, and that's the new Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I'll talk about that later in the show. I enjoyed the film, and we'll talk about it. We even have a giveaway connected to it. But to segue into what we're doing now, George Lucas recently had said, or in some of the interviews about Indiana Jones, had said that he wanted to make Indiana Jones because he wanted to make a film that he just wanted to see up on the screen. It's the kind of movie he wanted to go to. Our next guest is a very interesting writer-director. He's not run-of-the-mill. When you think of artists who take from their own life and their own life experiences and who put out films that are about the things that interest them, that speak about them, just in the films they've made, you think of Woody Allen, Orson Welles, Spike Lee, and another director named Henry Jaglom. Henry Jaglom has been in the scene for a long time. And we're going to have him here live with us this morning, or this evening, depending on how you look at it, to talk about his latest film that's just come out on DVD called Hollywood Dreams. But out of the magnanimous benevolence of Henry Jaglom, he's donated a bunch of the DVDs here for WBAI so that you can pledge during this show. For a $40 pledge, you can get the DVD. And if you're not sold just on the name Henry Jaglom alone and the title Hollywood Dreams, if you stay tuned, you'll know why this is a film that not only do you want to see, but you're going to want to own, and a director whose work you're going to want to see. So stay tuned. Henry Jaglom, are you there?
I am here.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Welcome to WBAI.
Thank you. It's my station when I'm in New York all the time.
All right. Well, I have a few questions for you. For those who are not familiar with your work, because you've been making films for over 30 years now. Am I correct?
That is correct, yep.
And a few things that have stood out in my knowledge of your work is that, and what has been written about you and about your work, is that you often make films that are referential or self-referential, that have to do with things that you've experienced in your life. And I have to wonder, this is something I always ask directors when, or not just directors, but a lot of time directors when they make a film, or a writer when he's written something, what the movie, you know, making this film allowed you to learn about yourself. But my question to you would be much broader. Have you, over the course of time making the kind of films that you've made, come to know yourself in ways you never would have if you had not chosen this profession?
Oh, yeah, I think for sure. I think any writer or creator who is self-referential to any degree, and I think almost every writer by definition is, and most filmmakers, true filmmakers are, learns continuously about themselves in the process. I certainly have. I mean, I made a film like Hollywood Dreams, which is the one that's coming out now on DVD, to explore that aspect that I had felt in myself many years ago when I first came to Hollywood, which was, what is the obsession with fame? What is the obsession with getting your name above the title, about getting people from all over the place to look at you and talk about you and focus on you? What lack in your childhood was there? You know, why did you not get enough attention in school? What was it? And it's a fascinating and endlessly exciting process for me. It's not really, I don't make films really about myself. They're more of films about my culture and the people I know around me who share with me certain aspects of focus in life.
Well, what's interesting, and I want to go back a little bit to the beginning of your career. You're often cited, and I can see why from seeing all your work, as being, you know, an actor's director, how you allow, yeah. The quote I believe was, you allow the characters to grow out of who the actors are playing them. And you started out as an actor. Now, what was that like for you? Did you always know you wanted to be a storyteller?
Yes, yeah, I because I come from a tradition which is the Actor's Studio, and Lee Strasberg and Harold Klerman were my original teachers. And what I learned was about, in terms of acting, was about just trying to tell the truth, moment-to-moment reality, trying to really be in present time. And in the stories that I try to tell on film, I'm trying to find out about certain aspects of human behavior as best as I can. Orson Welles once said that what I do is different from other people, because you won't find any kind of car crashes or any big action adventure or any cute little Martians arriving in your backyard. It's they're films about people and how they deal with one another, love and loss and relationship and aspects of the self, which are frequently overlooked, I think, in film, especially in Hollywood today, in favor of some big, combustible, exciting kind of dramas, which is not what I'm interested in.
Well, you know, I have to say, because I'm a writer myself, I think that to be able to, being a writer, sort of like a pseudo-psychologist, in order to create characters and humans, you have to understand humans. So, and being in Hollywood is kind of a surreal reality.
Hollywood is by definition surreal, so exactly. That's why it's very easy to make a film here about the obsessiveness and insanity of Hollywood, sure.
Well, tell me, how did you go from, I mean, you were not only, you were in Orson Welles' Uncompleted, The Other Side of Wind, but you were also in Gidget and The Flying Nun, I mean.
No, please, don't hold that against me. The Gidget and The Flying Nun were part of the regular process that a young actor goes through to try to break through to do the stuff that is somehow meaningful, you know, so. You would take anything at that time, and in the late 60s I was under contract to Columbia Pictures as a very young actor, and got the starring roles in those kind of shows, but it was actually doing that made me realize that I wanted to be a director and that I couldn't spend the rest of my life, you know, being a Sally Fields co-star when she was flying with her nun's habit. So it was not a bad grounding, as long as you leave it in time. I think the trick is to leave it in time, you know.
Not a bad grounding, pardon the pun, for the flying.
Grounding,
there,
right? That's right.
Okay.
Think of that.
Well, I guess what I'm getting at here is what you just said. You know, what about some of those experiences made you realize you wanted to direct, and how, you know, how was that transformation from actor to director?
No, it wasn't that that they made me realize I wanted to direct. I've always wanted to direct. They made me realize that I didn't want to waste any more time acting in other people's sort of ideas of what to do. I wanted to try to put on screen my own sensibility. Because I was involved in the editing of a film that became very successful, which was Easy Rider, I, like the other principals in that film, Jack Nicholson and Bob Rafelson and Dennis Hopper, all got to direct a film of our own choice. And my first film was a film called Safe Place with Jack Nicholson, Tuesday Weld, and Orson Welles, which was a natural sort of springboard for me to examining, as I did in that film and as I've done in all my 15 films, I think, that I've made since then, examining the culture around me, examining my own needs and the needs of the people around me. You know, Orson Welles described it very interesting. I'm sorry to keep quoting him, but he was sort of...
Please, how could you... You know,
Orson is very quotable. He said to me once that watching me make films was interesting because it was different from how other people made films, and it reminded him, he said, of an old Eskimo he had seen in a film, a documentary film about Eskimos. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, you're like this old Eskimo, Henry, that I saw in this film. And the filmmaker goes up to the Eskimo and asks him what he's sculpting at when he has a gigantic walrus tusk in front of him, which he's carving away at. And he says, what are you making? And the Eskimo looks up at him, bewildered by the question, and says, I don't know, I'm trying to find out what's inside. And that's, Orson said, that's what you're doing with your films, Henry. You're trying to find out what's inside of yourself, your friends, the women in your life, the people you know, our entire culture, trying to sort of cut away all the excess from it and look at what it's really going on, what it's really about. And up to this day with Hollywood Dreams, I think that that's been my goal. And it's not new to me. Certainly John Cassavetes did it, Woody Allen does it, Marty Scorsese does it, you know. Bob Altman certainly did it. The people who are willing to really use film as a way to something more than just distracting entertainment or mindless kind of thrills.
So to really examine the human condition.
To try to look at the human condition and look at oneself and understand it all, which is what we're all, you know, on this journey about. I mean, it's just trying to find out what's going on, why we're going through what we're going through, why we're feeling what we are.
Well, you tend to listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM, and we're speaking with Henry Jaglom, who's the writer-director of 15 films, his latest being a film called Hollywood Dreams. We're going to be talking about that, and we're going to be talking with the star of that film, Tana Frederick. Is
the extraordinary star.
Extraordinary star. A discovery is what you really should call her.
A major discovery of all time.
And right now we're in the middle of a marathon. And what that means is that you get a chance now to support this station that you've been listening to and support WBAI. And for that, we offer premiums. We give you things for supporting us. We try and give something back. And Henry has offered copies of his latest film for a $40 pledge. If you call 212-209-2950 right now, there are people who are there willing to take a pledge for your copy of Hollywood Dreams, and to become a member of WBAI. So it's 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Henry, I have another question for you, and especially considering what Hollywood Dreams is about, like you said, and I have to say, talking to you, and I've read a lot about you now, I'm finally getting to talk to you, and a lot of things sort of coalesce. I mean, your first film was about a woman trying to find her place in the world in a way. And this film is actually, all your films have dealt with similar subjects of people trying to whether they're conscious or not, figure out who they are
and what they're doing here.
And
yeah.
What they're doing here. Exactly. I could think of three films where that's a strong theme. But in a film, again, one of the things that any director would tell you is that casting is more than half the job. Like,
absolutely.
When you find the right person, you know, whatever you've created can just grow from that.
Casting and editing are the two most important aspects of filmmaking, I think.
All right, well, I have a theory. I feel films are directed three times, like once on the page, once on the set,
right.
And once in the
editing room.
Exactly,
and once in the editing room. That, my case, very largely in the casting and then in the editing room.
All right, see, that's what I want to ask you about, your casting, because of the kind of film you make, it, to me, meaning casting is even more crucial. Like, you won't even shoot a roll of film until you get the exact right actor.
That's absolutely correct, because it's out of the actors that I determine what it is that I'm trying to work with. I'm trying to look at people, so the way to do it is through people. And if you find an exciting actor or actress who can really express their needfulness, express their hopefulness, express their joy and their sadness in a full and vivid kind of way, you really can, go places that are unimaginable usually. And I think that that's the engine for those of us who are serious filmmakers.
Well, something else now I want to ask you. Now, when you first conceived, and I don't know how you work as a writer, tell me a little bit about your process. What was the germ of the idea for Hollywood Dreams? You said it's something you've had a while. And then how did you start to create the character?
Well, actually, the germ for it took place 30 years ago or so when my friend Jack Nicholson became a star, and I watched the process of somebody becoming a star and transitioning from an unknown person to a star, and I watched what that process was about and what people were going through in order to achieve it. And then I looked around at all of my fellow actors and saw that we were all like attempting to, in our own way, reach something, feel something in ourselves which we felt was missing, something we couldn't even define, that allowed us to put up with all the rejection and the pain and the incredible bad odds that exist when you come to Hollywood to try to break through it and become something significant. So I wanted to make a film then, and I actually talked with Nicholson at that time about it, and it turned out to be quite premature. But 32 years later, I think it was, Tana Frederick came into my office, and as a result of having hustled me very beautifully, which she'll tell you about if you want to, she got in front of me, and I saw the person who I really realized could make this film make sense, because you could center it on this particular person. It's her magic that makes the film work from my point of view.
Well, one thing I have to say about her portrayal is you've written a character or created a character, even if it's not all completely written by you. You've created a character who could very easily be incredibly unlikable.
Yeah.
And it's really a talent that I think Tana has, from being sort of like, you know, stay back with the cross neurotic to really just being so endearing that you want to hug her.
Yeah, the endearing neurotic thing and the capacity to be really frightening at the same time and almost repelling. In order to tell the truth, I felt I had to find somebody who could go to those extremes, who was willing to expose themselves that way, their less attractive sides, their more desperate side, as well as somebody who had a real innate charm that would overcome that. And that's the complexity that you need for this character. That is precisely what you just described. Why, when I found Tana, I realized I had found my vehicle. Because it cannot be somebody who's just cute, charming, attractive, easygoing, and everybody falls in love with her. Nor can it be somebody so difficult and impossible and crazy that they could never get past the desperation stage. You have to have both a drive that is almost insane, a neurosis need that is crippling, and at the same time a survival instinct that is so powerful and so intense that you overcome all the resistance in yourself as well as in others and make it through, and that's what Tana represents to me.
All right, well, you tune to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI. We're speaking with Henry Jaglom, the writer-director of the new film Hollywood Dreams, which we're offering as a premium for $40 if you call 212-209-2950. People are there to take your call if you want to make a pledge. Now, Henry, before we start to talk to Tana, so tell me now a little bit more about your process and how you write. Like, you've had the germ of the idea for over 3 years.
Yeah, but when I met Tana, I realized, okay, I'm ready to write this movie. I do sit down and write a movie. Contrary to some of the mythology about me, it's not made up on the spot. You have to be very precise and thorough to get the curve, the arc, the storyline down, and I do all of that. But when I get exciting actors like Tana, I encourage them to just get the story down for me on film and then depart, and then in their own words, take off, go in any direction they want, allow themselves to express the intention of the scene, but frequently using their own memory, their own language, their own histories even. So, for instance, in Hollywood Dreams, you've got a girl coming from Iowa to L.A. Well, Tana did come from Iowa to L.A. She's obsessed with certain things about Iowa. Tana is obsessed with certain things about Iowa. She's got a drive that is almost overwhelming, and Tana's drive has been like that. At the same time, of course, she's a complex, balanced actress who can handle all of that and show you all the dimensions of that, and she's a totally charming, winning character. So that when you go through the almost horrifying aspects and you are sort of shuddering at the desperation and needfulness of this vulnerable, crazed creature, she then turns on you and suddenly just totally wins your heart. And that, for me, is something that you need a brilliant actress to do.
I agree 100%.
Of course, she's making me say all this because she's right here now waiting to get on the
connection. Of course. She's got the electric prod.
That's right. She actually just walked by, so she heard me doing this. I don't want you to believe a minute of it. Okay.
Well, I have two co-hosts here. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
And I also have Elena, who's here in the studio.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, Elena. Oh, the three of you. Good. Thank you.
The three of us. Chris, now, do you have any questions you wanted to ask Henry before you speak to Tana?
Just that, do you feel at the point you are having, when people ask you questions, you just say, just see my films, because it seems like a retrospective of many different aspects of things that you have come to learn about yourself or how you view the world. Do you think you've pretty much gotten to say everything you need to say? Or
absolutely not. If I thought I had gotten to everything, if I thought I had gotten to everything that I had to say, I'd shoot myself. No, fortunately, I don't know how well you know my films, but somebody noticed recently that one of my films is called Always, one of them is called Baby Fever, one of them is Can She Bake a Cherry Pie, Deja Vu. I'm going through the alphabet, Eating, Festival in Cannes, Going Shopping, Now Hollywood Dreams. You notice a theme here? So I've got a lot of letters to go through still. You know, I've got the next film coming up, which I've already shot with Tana, which I'm editing now, which is called Irene in Time. And now I've got to go to my J film. So I've got Last Summer in the Hamptons. I've got to skip over that decay. I gave myself a little game like that in order to force myself never to feel that I was ready or finished with
awesome.
My work.
Awesome.
All right. Well, so the well is not dry.
The well is never going to be dry. Now, that's, the body runs out, the well keeps going. That's the great thing about every artist I know. Orson Welles, on his last minutes on this earth, was busily writing with a... He could hardly move. He had a big typewriter up in his big belly, and there he was trying to prepare another movie. You know, a Chaplin. I recently found a kind of a scrap of paper where Chaplin, in his last month, was trying to create a film, was writing the idea for a new film, and he was in his like late 80s at the time. You know, you don't give up. I think if you're really doing this stuff, it's your life. You know.
I agree 100%.
Would you like Tana to jump on the other phone?
I would like Tana to jump on the other phone.
Okay. Tana, jump on the other phone. Okay. You've got three nice people here on the phone. Tana, are you there? Uh-oh, now she can't get to the thing.
Well, I'm going to do a station ID while Tana comes
okay.
in. You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. And we've been speaking with Henry Jaglom, who is the writer-director of the new film Hollywood Dreams. Henry's been on the scene for over three decades, worked with everybody from Jack Nicholson to Orson Welles. His new film features Tana Frederick and a cast of other people you may know, like Karen Black, David Provall, Justin Kirk. And it's a really, really interesting look at what are those dreams? Why are there so many people obsessed with becoming a famous movie star? Why are we in a celebrity-obsessed culture? And how far will you go? What do you have to have? What are you willing to give up? What do you have to lie about? Those are all the things that are explored in this film. And how much do you end up lying to yourself in order to achieve something that is completely outside of yourself? Am I right, Henry? Henry?
I'm right here.
Are you there?
What Tana has just discovered is that in this world of cell phones, the other line is not working, and therefore I'm going to hand her the phone right now, and if you have something to ask me, she's going to hand it back.
Okay? Wait, now. Am I calling on a cell phone or an office line?
No, it's a private, it's a landline.
It's a landline, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a second line, I can call you on that.
Well, I don't know if there's a second line. I don't know. What are you pushing? Hello? What is this?
Speakerphone, no. Can you hear us? Wait a minute.
If you call 212-209-2950.
Oh, well, yeah, let me give you a timeout, okay?
Okay, that's fine.
All
you
right, we'll listen.
She can, thank you. We do very good. She'll do it back and forth if necessary.
Okay. Well, okay. So far, I just want to say, I want to thank the people who have already pledged the $40. You can call 212-209-2950. We only have a certain amount of copies of this.
But everybody who calls will get one.
Everybody who calls will get one. Like I said, $40 pledge. It's really an enjoyable, interesting film. It's the kind of film that you watch with people. You know some of these people. You know some of these characters.
If you get me the names of the people who pledge, I'll throw in the book that comes with it, a very interesting book all about
the
making.
Really?
Oh, shoot.
Photos and the making of the
212-2. Well, I don't have one of those books myself.
You'll get it.
I want a book. Okay. 212-209-2950. Make your pledge right now. $40 pledge. You can get your copy of Hollywood Dreams starring New Discovery, Tana Frederick. Tana, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Tana, you're still a discovery for most people out there. When did you know that this is what you wanted to do, Tana? I think I may have asked
really,
you something.
Really, really young. I was 6 or 7 years old, and I saw my best friend play Oliver in a production in Oliver in the in a Mason City production, children's theater production. And I just remember sitting in the audience and just knowing at that point, this is what I was meant to do. This is going to be my life. And so from then on, I joined the children's theater, and I was doing like 4 to 5 shows a year. And every, you know, sort of production that I could get my hands on at the community theater, at the children's theater, in middle school and high school, I would be in everything.
Well, here's the question now. You're in Iowa, and you have these Hollywood dreams. And now, your story about how you met Henry is somewhat legendary, but I would definitely want to share for those here who don't know about it. But tell me, so you did all this theater. You're in Iowa, though. This is Iowa. This is not exactly the entertainment capital of the world.
But
I also want to say it is no small thing to leave where you are from to go pursue your dream. So talk to me. How did you meet Henry, and when did you leave Iowa?
Well, I left Iowa. My parents definitely wanted me to finish college and go to college before I went to Los Angeles. So I went out the day that I graduated from college, or the day after. I packed up my Honda Civic with all of my stuff and headed out toward Los Angeles. And my car broke down in Denver, and luckily I had an uncle that lived there. And I don't know, I did something crazy like blow the head gasket, and then for the rest of the trip, I had to drive 35 miles an hour to Los Angeles, so I think it ended up taking me like a week to get there. But I got there and then started pounding the pavement, trying to get auditions, trying to figure out what the whole game of Hollywood was about. And, just tried to, I realized when I first started that it was going to be a lot harder to get into doors than I thought. And so I thought, I'm going to take some unconventional ways, find some unconventional ways to get people's attention, because there's so many people in the dating casting directors and directors and producers with their headshots, with their material, out here. And I just thought, well, okay, I'm going to try to figure out something interesting. So I was I was rehearsing a play at the Greenway Court Theater out here, and I had a castmate come back and say, I just worked with the most brilliant director. His name's Henry Jaglom. And I thought, well, can you get me in to see him? How do I get in to see this brilliant guy, Henry Jaglom? And he said, well, he's a sucker for anybody who writes a letter saying that they love his films. If you write him a letter, a love letter about one of his films, he'll call you into the office. And I thought, wow, well, this, I might as well try. So I wrote Henry a three-page single-faced letter about Deja Vu and how much I loved it. And then I dropped it off at the office the next day. And he ended up calling me. And we chatted for a while, and he asked me to come in and see Festival in Cannes. And when I saw Festival in Cannes, I just went crazy over his work and his talent, and thought, okay, this is a filmmaker I'd like to be filming. Oh,
and I'm grabbing the phone now because she always messes up this part of the story.
I know.
What happens is she comes in. I see how terrific she is. We start talking. We start rehearsing stuff. I give her the script of a play I've written. She ends up getting it produced. I was only suggesting she does it in her acting class. in any way, in any case, 3 years later, 3 years, two plays, and two movies later, she allows me to finally find out. She finally confesses that she had never seen the movie she wrote me the letter about.
Wow,
it was
yes.
a total hustle.
Yes.
She had only seen the title, the titles, like 5 minutes in, and then she decided to write me. And I had thought, what a brilliant letter. What an intelligent girl. She really gets my work. And here I'm handing her back to you now. Here you go.
See, I knew you were editing because you had told me the story before, but I didn't want to say anything. I said, all right, Henry's there. Maybe she, you know, he's got a bat or something.
Oh, no way. No, the only thing Henry would get upset about is if I fail to tell the punchline correctly, which I always do for some reason. But no, I mean, I saw the opening credits. I think I had to get up and, like, you know, make pizzas at some restaurant in North Hollywood the next morning. So I was tired. So I watched the opening credits and pulled the old, like, college thesis skills out, you know, freshly graduating from college, and wrote a lovely, long, languid, beautiful letter to Henry praising him. And then I finally did see Deja Vu. And like I said, when I saw Festival in Cannes, I really realized that it was very fortuitous that I had happened onto this director, because he makes films the way that I want to make films. He and I just totally mesh, you know. He's got a crazy style of freedom and honesty and bigness and passion that really gel with my own work, and we have just been an amazing collaboration team.
All right, well, I have a bunch of questions for you, but I do want to let people know. We're speaking with Tana Frederick, who is a star of a new movie that's just coming out on DVD. It's called Hollywood Dreams, and we're offering it here for a $40 pledge. You can see this new film. It's Henry Jaglom's film, which he wrote and directed. Henry Jaglom, who's been writing and directing films for over 30 years. If you're not familiar with his work, you need to get with it. And this latest discovery of his is Tana Frederick. I'm speaking with her here live. 212-209-2950, $40 pledge, you can get a copy of the movie, Hollywood mm-hmm. Dreams, and Henry says he will even send down some books to go along with it. So, only here, only on this show, 212-209-2950. Tana, my first question for you is this now, in working with Henry, now, in what had your experience been prior to working with Henry? What kind of directors, whether it's in, you know, theater or film, have what kind of experience were you getting from being an actor?
Well, of course, actually Iowa has, I think, an amazing theater program, music program. You know, they're one of the top in the nation, and there's so many people there who are hungry for art and open to exploration. You know, University of Iowa, where I graduated from, has an amazing playwriting program, and so I was constantly working and being challenged by their by doing new plays, you know, very avant-garde, crazy plays, and I think that really helped me to be open to just trying new things out. And so when I came out to Hollywood, I started to work with other independent directors, you know, on smaller budget films. Not a lot. It was, you know, I have such a large sense of acting, and a lot of people would try to rein me in and tell me to be smaller. And so, you know, I got a national commercial here and there, and did a couple of independent films, but mostly Henry was the first person who said, you know what, he was very sweet. He said, your smile is like Jack Nicholson's. Just smile and the whole world will love you. So I just started smiling my way through everything. And he said, you know, just let it go. Just be yourself. I want you full on camera, and, I don't want you to hold back. And so that was really like a breakthrough for me and who I was as an actor. I always thought, you know, I can't be big, and I think that's one of the biggest fallacies, and you decide that for yourself, you know. It's been a real, really special self-discovery for me, because I don't need to tailor my acting down. There are going to be projects that actually tailor themselves toward my style of acting, and I think that's kind of refreshing and nice to not be apologetic for, you know, my own spasticness,
and how much you give. Well, you know, it is interesting because it seems to me, I mean, the two of you are singing each other's praises both separately and together, because I've spoken to you, like I said, on my other show, and it's obvious in the film and in the exuberance and the energy of the film how much I think you're enjoying being able to just let go. All the actors seem to, especially, you know, some of my, you know, old favorites like Karen Black. You can see they're just having fun.
Yeah.
And enjoying delving into things and playing with just things you wouldn't get to play with in terms of how you're going to portray something in what I see more traditional films to be like. Would you agree with that?
I would completely agree with that. I think the word play is the key word here, because when you are on a set of Henry's, you know, granted, if you watch Who is Henry Jaglom, some people might come down on some, so what they assume is some sort of ferocity on the set, but really, Henry's one of the most joyful, giving, wonderful directors, you know, I've ever seen. I mean, it's like a session at the actor's studio. All of the actors feel very safe with him. You know, he's not going to try to be nice to, you know, the crew or something just because he, you know, he's not that way. He is protective of the actors, and makes sure that the actors come first and foremost, and they have a solid, safe ground on which to play. And as a result, they do. They have so much fun. There's so much laughter. I'm not sure what it would be like to film Saturday Night Live, but it's great. All the actors sit around and watch each other come up with the scenes, and then after you know, it's been filmed, then everybody starts cheering and laughing and clapping, and it's just like this brilliant acting class that we're just there to have a good time, and Henry allows that, and Henry encourages that, and that's amazing. I don't think you could really ever ask for more than that as an actor.
All right, well, Chris?
Yes, I'm right here.
Did you have a question for Tana?
What was the best part of making this film? Discovering.
Well, what was the best part? What was the best part? And what was the worst part?
Yeah.
Ah, the best and the worst. that's a funny question.
Thank you.
The best part, I have to say, and Henry's right here, so hopefully he won't get angry with any of my answers. The best part was. Just like I said, the freedom. Like, for example, the last take of the movie. Henry, I get bored really easily. I have what's called Zugzwleich, and I don't like sitting still, and I don't like filming the same thing over and over and over. So Henry kind of throws me like curveballs here and there, and that's fun for me, you know. He'll just say, okay, I want you to go in and do such and such with this actor. And I'll have no idea, you know, the actor will have no idea, and it's just kind of like going in and like messing with them, and I enjoy that. And the very last scene of the movie, Henry just kept the camera rolling, and I was like, well, what am I supposed to do now? I guess I'll just get a little bit crazier. So I just went off into this whole dark tangent about, you know, without giving too much away, you know, about my brother. Okay, don't tell them, okay. But you know, it was just one take, and Henry kept the camera rolling, and that's fun. That's the cool part of it.
What's the bad part?
Henry.
There is no bad part. There's no bad part at all. She just can't think of anything bad. That's why we've done a sequel since.
That's why you have her tied up.
That's why I have her tied up.
And the bad part is the last day of shooting. That's the bad part.
Yes, we have one phone.
You have one phone. That's right. No,
there's no bad parts.
Do you want to tell them a bad part here?
There's only one bad part.
What's
just
that
the crew gets frustrated. Just that there was an impossible woman on set. Impossible. And she was, you know, kind of. And Henry fired a few people. And, you know. But none of the actors. None of the actors. Just the crew. That's it.
I'm grabbing the phone again. No, the only reason I love crews that do what they're supposed to do, but many times crews want to impose their kind of limitations, and they say to you, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't shoot it that way, it won't cut. And I learned on my first movie, I said to Orson Welles on my first film, he was in my first film, and they were telling me, don't do that, you can't do that. This very professional crew, the cinematographer had done some huge Hollywood films, and they were just astounded by my way of working. And they said, it won't cut, it's no good, you can't shoot it that way. Orson said,
when they say you can't do it, tell them it's a dream sequence. And I said,
wow.
Why a dream sequence? I said, just tell it to them. So the next after that afternoon, when we went back on the set, the first thing I wanted to do, sure enough, the cinematographer and some assistant said, there's no way of doing that. It won't cut into the script. You can't do it. I said, it's a dream sequence. The guy said, a dream sequence? Why didn't you say so? If I get on my back, what if I do this? It would really be... And so the rest of the movie was like silk. And I said to Orson, you know, why is that? Why does that work? And he said, you know, many, many people who are not actors, who are not artists, who are not writers, but who are regular folk, they have been told over and over again that life has rules and regulations and it's stiff, it's like precise. Mm. But in their dreams, they know that they can do anything, that anything's possible. So if you tell them it's a dream sequence, it frees their imagination. They don't have to try to limit themselves to what they think life can allow.
That's pretty great.
Wow.
It's the greatest piece of advice anybody's given me.
I'm going to use that quote coming from you as a quote, because I think that is the most inspirational thing I have heard in such a long time. Thank you so much for that, because that is just...
I'm glad. Can I give you another one, which
yes.
Orson said that is over my editing room? He said, the enemy of art is the absence of limitations. I would complain to him, I don't have enough money on a film, I don't have enough time, I don't have all this stuff that Hollywood, big Hollywood movies. He said, look, if you had all the money in the world and all the time in the world, you would use that money to solve the problem. If you don't have it, if you don't have the time, if you've got limitations, you're forced to find a creative result. Limitations force creativity. So it's positive to be limited, to be forced. The absence of art is the enemy of art. Is the absence of limitations.
You
embrace
know
your limitations.
You want to know something? I just have to relate this because it's something we have to talk about later. I was just watching a behind the scenes on, they just re-released Raiders of the Lost Ark, the original three.
Uh-huh.
And Steven Spielberg was talking about the fact that he had made all these films that had gone way over budget. Jaws went way over budget and over schedule. And then he did Closing Counters way over budget, over schedule. He did 1941 way over budget, way over schedule. And he wanted to do a film that he could do, you know, on budget, on time. And he said throughout the entire making of Raiders of the Lost Ark, when he was editing, he kept thinking, oh, I wish I had this coverage, I should have that. And he had to come up with creative ways to go around, and that's the best film.
Yeah, but the problem with that story is that it's Steven Spielberg, and those films cost hundreds of millions of dollars, even what you call the cheapest film.
Well, sure.
Since my film was basically cost what lunch on one of those films cost.
Well, but what
by telling me that I should embrace my limitations and find a way to address problems that don't take time and don't take money, Orson was giving me the freedom to have the equality as if I had a crew of 200 and $100 million to make the film.
Mm.
I mean, it's to me, that's the greatest thing to tell somebody who's especially starting out.
Sure.
Because you are forced to find creative solutions. And the other, the dream sequence, lets everybody else help you. You know, it gives everybody else the freedom to help you.
That's great. I have to say,
it's great. I think it's great. I'm blown away.
Well, I have a question for you, Henry, and this
okay.
will kind of lead back to Tana.
Okay.
Again, seeing your films and some of the others that are some of my favorites. Now I'll admit to you, and I think I mentioned to Tana, I'm a filmmaker, and I've become a film critic. Kind of took a time off from my career for some personal things I had to do, and being a film critic, you know nothing but all these film critics, and, you know, I won't even get into what it is to be a film critic or to know film critics, but I have to say, if I mention your name, people love you
or hate
you, or
I
they
know.
Hate you.
I know.
There's no in between. There's nobody that goes, yeah, Henry's okay.
I collect some of those reviews. People Magazine said about one of my films, if this movie were a horse, you'd shoot it. I love the extremes that I seem to elicit. I don't know why that is.
Well, you know, what
that is
what
something
I,
to frame.
I frame them all.
Oh, of course.
Those are the ones I love the best.
Well, what I find, and I want to ask you, Henry, what you credit that to, because I think it's so interesting.
What I really think of that's about, if you try to tell the truth, or the emotional truth, it makes a lot of people uncomfortable, and it's liberating to a lot of other people. So for a lot of people, they've been sitting in the dark, and they're seeing people up on the screen, which is my intention, that reflects their real life, their real issues that they've been dealing with. And they feel relieved. They're not the only ones going through it. We're all... As a record of the 1970s said, we're all bozos on this bus. You know, we all share this journey, and that's very liberating. On the other hand, it's terrifying to a lot of people to be forced into that naked kind of exposure of human vulnerabilities, human patheticness, we show ourselves on screen in the, in my films, and not just the most charming and attractive aspects of oneself. And I think that's very off-putting to some people.
Well, I have to say something I've noticed about your films, and it's in, to me, that you know, maybe it's a little subversive on your part, but it's in the editing and the pacing. The thing about the editing and pacing, and it's interesting what you said about, you know, people showing themselves and showing real life and not having the comfort of that finely edited, chopped up
right.
movie
exactly.
time. Things right. happen in movie time. In your films, things seem to happen in real time. You know, the shot will go on a lot longer.
Right.
And now, what, you know, knowing what it is to play with sound and image, how much of that is intentional?
Did it's all deliberate. Every single thing you see, love it or hate it, each movie of mine, I take about 2 years usually to edit a film, and frame for frame, they're my films, whether you want them to be or not. And I find interesting that the same kind of statement is made by people who love the films and hate the films, that they are almost like too personal, that you're so intimate that you feel like you're there somehow, and that makes some people feel like they shouldn't be watching, you know. I felt always as a child, I loved movies, but I always felt, you know, that's beautiful. As soon as you're saying that's a magnificent landscape, look, that's so fluid, that editing, that you don't even feel, it looks like reality, that's a great performance, or that's great screenwriting. As soon as you do any of those things, you're out of the movie. You're in your head. You're aware it's a movie. I wanted to bridge that separation between you in the dark and the people up on the screen, and make you feel like you're experiencing, like you're having whatever their experience is, that you're less likely then to feel isolated, and like you're the only one, whether it's a film like Eating, which deals with the eating problem or issues, or loneliness or love or whatever the relationships are, that you can share that with the people on the screen without feeling a safe distance in the audience. That's my goal.
Well, I have to say, I think you reach it, and I'm gonna pause there, because I want to ask you another question, make another point about your filmmaking. But you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, and I want to thank those. We've been steadily getting people pledging who are interested in seeing the work of Henry Jaglom, and if you haven't seen it, it is a different kind of filmmaking. It does not have some of the traditional beats and moments you're waiting for. And I have to say something I'm going to bring up in a minute, but you can call 212-209-2950 right now. For a $40 pledge, you can get a copy of the latest Henry Jaglom film, Hollywood Dreams, the film we've been talking about, and the style and approach to storytelling. One thing I do want to say about filmmaking and films that are out there, I think there is room for everything. And I think that if you like movies, you really should embrace what's out there. That though Hollywood may put out lots of big budget, big bloated summer blockbusters, you know, it's a great thing that there are Henry Jaglom's out there, and there are filmmakers who do films that are personal, that are not necessarily looking to be number one at the box office, but they're looking to make sure that they got it right. He'll take 2 years and get it right, get it to the way he wants it to be, and leave it there for you to see. 212-209-2950. We're speaking with Henry Jaglom and Tana Frederick, the star of Hollywood Dreams, $40 pledge. Henry, what I also found interesting is that the people who don't like your films, they're impatient with them.
Very impatient.
They're waiting. Where's this going? That's a phrase that I heard from.
That's very interesting, and that's very true. I've had people years later say to me, you know, I was forced by somebody to watch your film again that I knew I hated, and I had turned away from after 20 minutes. Once you get in 20 minutes or 25 minutes, that person said, you kind of get hooked. So there is something about the natural expectancy of
yes,
what films tell you that should happen in terms of entertainment and kind of. And I don't try to do that. I do try to ease you in a way that life tries to ease you in, and then throw you some curves, you know. But I understand that people are impatient. I don't completely understand why some of them get so angry at me. Why some of them, you know, go to such an extent that they say, another one of my favorite reviews is, some people wait for their yearly, what's it called underneath the tooth, root canal treatment.
Root canal.
Yeah, and that's the way I feel about every Henry Jaglom film I see. So, I mean, there are people who go to great extremes in their antagonism, and I don't understand that. I think possibly I tap upon some emotional things that people are uncomfortable seeing. And,
actually, I would take that as a compliment.
I would too. And you know what I think is interesting?
That's very nice of you. I want to add that I only get that from men.
Oh, really?
So, because women are much more patient and willing to examine, like they are in life, human nature and look at something and not make immediate judgments.
Oh, Henry, you old smoothie.
Well, yeah, I definitely am willing to look at. You know, human nature.
Human nature and understand the
variables.
But
at the same time, and to your point, knowing human nature or observing human nature, I totally understand being hopped up and angry and criticizing people in the very wrong way.
Yeah,
so,
sure. Yeah, I understand it well. I'm just always
and not
a
that
angry.
I'm not justifying it.
I'm just always a little stunned that I provoke.
I totally. I would.
Well, you know, I have my theories about that, Henry.
Tell me your theories.
Well, I have a couple theories about that, especially
no,
because
Lord.
I've known your films.
Oh, Lord, she said.
Shut up. Shut up, Elena. Shut up. Okay.
I think she feels one theory.
He just threw a nut at me.
I
ow.
I have to throw some nuts at
I'd
me.
Like to hear your theories.
Well, all right. Well, the first theory I have, and that's where I was coming from with the impatience, I think that you know, especially film critics or quote-unquote movie lovers, you know, it's sort of like if you're used to McDonald's hamburgers, you know, and the burger is the same size as the bun, you know, and that's what you have, and that's a hamburger. If somebody gives you something that's completely different, it's still a movie. It's still
Wait,
a story.
The burger is never the same size.
This is the most bizarre analogy I have ever
but
heard.
But hear me out. Hear me out.
I'm trying. It's a different size.
Yeah, because the burger
no,
is never
it's not
the
that
same
it's a different.
Size
shut up, Elena. It's not that it's a different size hamburger. It's something that was made by someone's hand. It's not made from a machine. It's you're getting a different kind of meal. Than the McDonald's meal. And I guess what I'm getting at is I think that you kind of get conditioned, you know.
That's true.
You see movies,
it's
a huge part of it. And maybe the hamburger is a bad analogy, but there's a conditioning, you know, as from being on both sides, both as a screenwriter and then as a film critic, you know, story structure and all these people talk about all these things, you know, all those beats that they're teaching screenwriters to do, quote unquote, audiences have now been conditioned to see because that's what's out there.
Yeah.
And I think that what happens is when you're confronted with something that has a different pacing, and I think the 20-minute mark, it's interesting that person said that, because that goes with my theory too. It's if you can, and I'll liken this to seeing a musical. If you go into a musical and you don't realize it's a musical, it's a little jolting. Like, oh, wait a minute, they're singing. And, you know, is the story moving from here? But if you can accept that it's a story being told in this way and just sit back and let the story unfold.
Yeah, I got you.
So that's my theory. I think that it's conditioning that makes people have such adverse reactions.
It is conditioning, and I think, therefore, it's a responsibility of creative people to not sort of pander to that conditioning just because they're going to bring in bucks, but to try to really look at the truth, and the truth is more complex than most people are conditioned to look at.
Completely, and embrace a type of storytelling.
And you might not like my saying this, but I think that women are more willing to look at the truth. They have just a greater willingness to examine things and not to prejudge.
Now, is that why you have more female fans?
That's why I have more females, but I also have more females in my film because I think that women are so largely untouched by Hollywood movies. Hollywood movies are made to such a degree by a set of infantile, either males who themselves are adolescent in their mentality or who are aiming at an adolescent male audience that is the big box office hit thing out there, that they're making women as cardboard characters. They're not really examining the issues that women confront in their lives. So for me, when I started realizing that as a filmmaker, I thought this was a vast area to explore, the area of women's lives and the truth of the complexity of women's lives.
Well, taking the theme of what you're saying about
of course, Chris jumps in now.
The risks of being someone that going to change the beat of how things are viewed. How are you looking at, I mean, are you excited about how all these new forms of being able to, you know, using Final Cut Pro and be able to shoot?
Oh, yeah, sure. The new technology is wonderful because it's allowed a whole new generation of people without money, without backing. You can just, you know, people are sending me on my email. Little movies that they've made, 6-7 minute movies. It was impossible a few years ago to get people to watch your film. now people can make films for practically no money and can get them seen and travel around at an incredible rate and put them on YouTube. And I think it's a wonderful technological advance in terms of the freedom that it gives to people to be creative and to share their creativity. I think it's nothing but good.
Right. Has anyone blown you away? So people can just send you their stuff?
Yeah, they can. They can to the Rainbow Film Co. That's the email, therainbowfilmco@aol.com. And I look at everything that comes my way. And I've met some wonderful people who have sent me some creative stuff. Here's Tana for a second.
That's awesome.
Why am I coming on?
Well, Tana, actually, I was going to lead into you next. I had some questions. I do have a couple questions for you about playing this character. My question to you is playing
it's
a character.
It's not your turn anymore, Henry. Be quiet. Sorry.
My question to you is how much did you learn about yourself making this movie?
How much did I learn about myself?
Or how about this? What did you learn about yourself?
Well, that's a really good. Another really good, deep, dark question.
And don't expect Mike to answer it about himself.
I think I learned a lot about. I think I was able to take all of the traumatic experiences that I had gathered throughout, you know, my 5 years out here struggling, and to be able to I think that laughter is you know the best therapy that you can possibly, and filming yourself and then laughing at yourself on film is probably one of the best therapies that anybody can do. And then for me to be able to put a lot of situations and work with Henry and turn that into a scene and then put it in the movie and not be embarrassed about it, not that I'm saying that I go to the extent that my character went to, but you know, just sort of exacerbate the sense of narcissism and neuroses that I do have was really helpful for me and really made me come away from the movie feeling like I had, you know, purged
Tana.
Of my less happy memories and turned them into an art form and that's that was really cool. I didn't expect that to happen.
Okay, but Tana, now I'm going to ask you again. Now, you told me what you learned doing it, but I want to know what you learned about yourself.
About myself. I learned about myself that I can deal a lot more. I thought that coming from Iowa, I don't like conflict. You know, nobody fights or everybody wants everybody to like each other in Iowa.
I totally agree with that.
And I think that I came on to probably one of the, I mean, not that every film set isn't heated, but I think this was kind of like trial by fire, and it was a crazy film set for me to walk on for my first film in a leading film, and I was a leading role, and I was with David Provol and Karen Black and all of these amazing veteran actors of Henry's, and I kind of held my ground, and I was pretty proud about that. Like, I was focused, I didn't freak out when there was any arguing on the set or I was really proud of myself for getting through it. Is that good enough?
Nah, that was pretty good. That was pretty good. Any particular people that you'd always wanted to meet or you're familiar with their work, like Eric Roberts or Sally Kirkland or Seymour Cassell or anybody?
Well, Eric, I'm in love with Julia Roberts. So during the kissing scene, to be able to kiss Julie Roberts' brother, it was awesome.
Okay.
I'm like, I'm just going to pretend he has long, curly hair.
All right, that's another show.
I know. That's the sequel. No, I'm just kidding. No, that was really cool. And Karen Black, people had told me I had kind of a similar Karen Blackishness to me, and for whatever that means. And so
that's
to be able to, yeah. And so to work around her and just kind of feed off of her, her energy and her kookiness was really fun.
Okay. Well, you tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM, and on the web at WBAI.org. We're speaking with Tana Frederick, who is the star of the new movie, Hollywood Dreams. It's just coming out on DVD now. It's a film by Henry Jaglom, who has made films like Festival in Cannes, Eating, A Safe Place. He's made films with everybody from Jack Nicholson and Orson Welles to Tana Frederick. So you can call 212-209-2950. For a $40 pledge, you can get a copy of Hollywood Dreams, the film we've been talking about. We're going to speak to them, keep them on the air with us for a little while longer. And I want to thank those who have pledged, and I want to encourage those who have not seen this. Like I said, it's not a film, you know, I'll be first to tell you, it's not a film for everyone. But you'll be, if you stay with it, you'll be very glad that you did, because not only will you find so many things that are humorous and interesting, and it's really, I think what Henry does, he really skewers some things that have not really, you know, they've only really been brushed upon lightly. Especially, I think, Justin Kirk's character. Do you agree with that, Tana?
I agree with that completely.
So 212-209-2950, make your pledge now. Thank you for the person who just pledged. 212-209-2950, you can get your copy of Hollywood Dreams, the new DVD starring Tana Frederick. So, Tana, let me ask you, you are definitely, and I have to say, when you think of brave performances, you know, you think of Harvey Keitel and Bad Lieutenant, you know, you think of a few films with few actors that really will just do things that you just go, whoa. And you've got a couple of scenes in there that are, you know, like, okay, she didn't just do what I thought she just did. So tell me about being so brave as an actress, and I'm assuming part of it has to be Henry making you just feel so comfortable doing it, but what was it for you to just go there on some of the things you have to do, which I don't want to give away.
I don't want you to give them away either.
No. Elena would like them.
Okay. A lot of women like them, and a lot of men. But I've always prided myself on making bold choices. Again, I think it's like coming from the Midwest and being in a family where, you know, we weren't really allowed to. You know, there was just a certain line of appropriateness, and if you crossed that line, you were definitely, you know, looked down upon. And so, I don't know, I was a rebellious kid, and theater has always been an excuse to do something naughty, to stir up the pot, you know, to make drama, and I like choices like that. And so, I always kind of go for the sensational over the safe. I think that's a lot more interesting.
So you go for the gusto.
I do, yeah. And I guess I'm kind of a thrill seeker in that sense, you know. I guess that's my personality. I surf and do taekwondo, and I've always been like the first one out in the dance floor, and you know, I don't know. I just like that. I like pushing the limits of what's safe and I almost can't not do it. I mean, in real life, I think I'm worried so much about myself as a person and what I say to people, and I feel very self-conscious a lot. And so when I'm given a role and a sort of, you know, framework in which to make bold choices, everything comes out. So
with on those days when you're self-conscious and you're alone, does that ever come into play where you like contemplate like, oh my gosh, what did I do yesterday when I really was at my gutsiest?
No, and that's always on a film set. Like, I really can't bring myself. I'm not brave enough to do that in life. I mean, if I'm feeling like a gutsy day, I'll write a scene or do something. Throw Henry an idea about some like kind of ballsy scene, but other than that, like I'm pretty tame. I'm like, you know, go home at night and watch Dancing with the Stars and eat pizza. And then,
yeah, well, that's kind of my question. Like, do those two worlds come in conflict? Like, when you're eating pizza, you're like, oh my gosh,
not
were no was conflict. I or whether or not too ballsy.
Oh, no, no. I like that. I like freaking people out, kind of.
And that's so cool, and you're ballsy, confident with it.
Yeah. I think the too ballsy has never come into question, because I think there would be such a thing as, like, being too mean. Like, I could never go on a reality show, and Girls Behaving Badly, it's a great show, but there's a lot of, like, catty, mean, you know, things that go on, and I think if, as long as my boldness isn't malicious, I don't really care if people like it or don't like it. It's just there, and it's what I chose to do in that moment, and it was real on film, you know, and yeah, yeah.
All right, see, Elena, no second guessing. Elena second guesses herself all the time. That's why she's asking me that.
Yeah. I do all the time, too. You have to be in a movie. It helps so much.
She almost was. She became the muse of a film director that we can't name, but it was an interesting time for her.
Tell.
She did. He met her as she's walking down the street, and he's like, who are you?
Oh my God!
Yeah, but she's never told anybody, so I can't say.
I can't.
There are no names, but it's a well-known director. And
okay, just tell me, was it indie or was it like commercial?
He flips back and forth.
Okay.
But he's sort of like a commercial indie guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, he does these films nobody else would do, and he gets the money to do them.
Wow! And he just sort of like met
picked
you
up
on
picked up on her as a muse.
Wow, that's kind of exciting, isn't it?
That's exciting. It was totally exciting. It was very flattering. Inspiring.
Did he change his characters into your, like, use you as a basis for any characters in films?
Well, he was planning to, correct?
Yeah. He made me muse into the characters he wanted me to be.
Whoa.
See, you two definitely have to have coffee. When
yeah, girl, we gotta talk.
Yeah, love to meet you.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. The movie is called Hollywood Dreams. We're talking with Tana Frederick, 212-209-2950. Make a pledge now, and you can get, for a $40 pledge, you can get a copy of Hollywood Dreams. I have a question now, actually, for Henry. Tana, but then I'm gonna switch you back.
Okay, here he is.
Hi.
Hey, Henry, I have a question for you.
Isn't she great?
Yeah, she's great.
She's sensational.
She's great.
Yeah, don't believe her. She's the fullest. She's more able on screen to just open up and totally be there. Whatever shyness she thinks she has, she just can. She's so able to commit to the fullest expression. You see it in the movie. Wait till you see the next one. You'll see.
Okay.
Another dimension. Yeah.
Now I'm curious a little bit about you and your career now,
yeah.
Henry. You know, what feeds your soul now? What is it that inspires you to say, I mean,
it's going to sound like bull, but I'll tell you the truth. What inspires me truthfully is finding actresses or actors that can do new kind of things, that can express things that I've wanted to deal with in new ways. And Tana Frederick is the most exciting for me because of that. I mean, I'm editing a second film with her, and we're preparing to shoot in the fall a third film. And it's, to me, that's an inspiration. That's like a complete motivation to just keep going and find new ways, because there's somebody who can express it in a completely unique form.
Well, now, what's interesting, I think, is that, you know, you're one could call you a creature of habit, or one could say that you're very loyal, because you work with the same cinematographer for at least 20 years now, and you have similar music, from whether it's Charles Trenet or Fred Astaire.
The 30s and 40s music as a counterpoint to modern life.
Mm.
I think that the romantic fantasies of those beautiful past songs interplay very well with the harder and more sort of complex realities of the world today. So that's why I like to juxtapose those.
Okay. Well, I guess what I'm driving at here is that, you know, this seems almost like a match made in heaven, like you two were kind of meant to meet each other.
It is like a match made in heaven. Did you see a film I made called Deja Vu by any chance?
Yes, I did.
Well,
yes, I did.
So it's like after making the film, you meet the person and you think, oh, that's what I was making the film about. And in this case, it's all about the incredible coming together of two artists who have a vision that is each one of which needs the other in some way to express the next level of.
Well, what you're doing in to me, it's interesting, because there have been a number of relationships like this in film, whether it was Martin Scorsese and Robert De Niro or Alfred Hitchcock and Bernard Herrmann, where, you know, you find it's a different definition of soulmate, because they feed some other part of your soul. It has nothing to do with romance necessarily. Would you say that's true?
Well, which part of that? I mean, it depends.
Well,
it depends. John Cassavetes had it with Jenna Rollins, mm-hmm. as well.
Woody Allen certainly had it with Mia Farrow.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, Ingmar Bergman had it with his actresses. And,
sure.
I think certain directors and certain actresses have a chemistry that works together that brings out the very best in the both of them. Mm. I mean, Tana's going to be doing a lot of other films with a lot of other directors, and she's going to be great. But to start out with our kind of chemistry allows her to express an aspect of herself which maybe is fuller and more complex than what they're going to want in more traditional filmmaking. She can do that brilliantly, and she will. But it is very exciting for her to be able to do that, and for me it is very exciting to find, you know, actors. And I've had them before, actors who have just totally been able to give me aspects of themselves, I mean, that nobody else could do. And that is the excitement of this kind of work. So when you find somebody who can kind of represent what it is you're trying to do on the screen, you just want to keep showing different aspects of using that person as much as you can.
All right, well, one of the things I want to talk to you just a little bit about here was your script and some of the other characters you have in there. Because what I was mentioning when I had Tana on the line is that you skewer some very specific things about Hollywood and about fame.
I hope so, yeah.
And about what you'll do. And to me, what I saw was, how much, you know, what are you willing to be dishonest about? And
I'm
know,
willing to be dishonest about everything.
Well, no, I'm saying.
No, I am. I'm saying it. I'm telling
all
you
right.
Honestly that I'm willing, in order to accomplish what I want to accomplish, as long as it doesn't hurt specific individuals, I don't care about institutions, I am absolutely willing to lie, cheat, steal, and be dishonest about absolutely everything, because I think what's got to be honest is only what you're putting up on the screen
is your desire
and how you're relating to the other human beings, not how somebody is dealing with institutions. You know, it's a kind of a manipulation that we're all trying to have to get a piece of, if you excuse the expression, which is a dirty word out here, art up on the screen. If you try to get a piece of really something that reflects real life on the screen, I personally will do almost anything to get that. I've been accused of that in a very negative way. I think of it as a very positive characteristic.
Well, what's interesting is that's, you know, ironically, that's largely what the movie's about. That's what
that's what the movie's about,
right.
Yes.
And that's what Tana's character does. That's what Justin Kirk's character does.
Yep. And that's why, in a way, Tana is playing me in the film, too.
Hmm.
And I'm very conscious of that.
That's interesting.
And that some of the excesses that people don't, you know about, that they think, you know, I have been very close to my heart. I mean, you know, it's hard to admit certain things socially, you know. But I did, when I was starring in those Gidgets and Flying Nuns, I actually got very turned on by the fact of my being on, like, on the screen, on the network, being watched all over the country. I found that as a turn on. I found that exciting. And that narcissism that forces you to become an actor to begin with, and hopefully at some stage you grow a little bit past, it was in full bloom for me at that stage, and that's where the scene comes from, where she, as you know, takes pleasure in her getting her picture in the paper.
See, I was alluding to that.
You were alluding, but I thought you were alluding to that.
I was alluding to it, but I didn't want to say.
I was trying to say, I don't think there's a problem.
No, he wasn't. Don't let Mike take the credit.
But he was. I knew he was. I think we said it cryptically.
I was going to say that.
Yeah. We did it well enough so that.
Don't let Mike get away with anything.
Okay, Mike. She doesn't want you to get away with anything.
No, she doesn't. No, she doesn't. That's why she's here.
That's good. That's good. A balance is always necessary.
Balance, yeah.
I let him get away with everything.
That's another kind of balance.
That's why we don't let him come in the studio anymore.
So when are you coming to New York, Henry? When are you coming to New York? Are you going to be in New York?
I come to New York a lot. I have a little apartment there, and I come there a lot.
Well, we should definitely have tea or coffee or beer or something.
Tea, whatever.
Daytime.
Tea is actually the drink of my choice.
I am Mr. Tea. Thank you.
I love tea. I mean, that's morning, noon, and night.
Thank you. I go the same way. I have at least 23 different teas in my house.
I go
at all
from
times.
Hot teas to iced teas to all kinds of exotic foreign teas. I love tea.
You like bubble tea?
What tea?
Have you ever heard of bubble tea?
Bubble tea I've missed.
Yeah, this is something new that they have here in all the Japanese restaurants. They call it bubble tea.
Bubble tea.
I swear to you. It's just...
All right, I will look for it in the next Japanese restaurant I go to.
You remember about that story about being deceptive and clawing your way to your art made?
It's true.
That's true.
All right.
Bubble tea.
So I just wanted to say the irony is that the way in which you met Tana is indicative or is a counterpoint to not a counterpoint, but it's in line with what Hollywood Dreams is all about. And it's interesting what you were saying, that, you know, you got excited about being on TV, and everybody has. We live in an age of MySpace and Facebook.
Narcissism. And that's what so much of it is about.
Yes, it is.
The excitement of projecting me and my image onto you and making all these people, especially if you've had a childhood where for some reason or other you didn't feel you were getting the focus you needed, you didn't feel you were getting the attention you needed, something, you know, you have to compensate for it badly enough to go through the incredible loops and jumps and gymnastics of trying to get famous. I mean, it's an incredibly difficult process, and you've got to be driven by some very disturbing ghosts in order to fight that hard for it.
Well, we're speaking with Henry Jaglom, who is the director, a writer-director of the new film Hollywood Dreams, just coming out on DVD now. And for a $40 pledge, you can call 212-209-2950. You can get a copy of that new movie.
And the book.
He's going to send some of the books down.
I'm
so
going to send you all the books.
He's going to send me all the books. So a book and a DVD. 212-209-2950. It's only a $40 pledge. Now, come on. Like, if two people go to a movie, it costs you more than $40.
Yeah, come on. $40, it's for the good of the station.
That's right. And you become a member of WBAI, and you're supporting a listener-supported radio. Understand, listener-supported. You listening, support, that's the concept.
I was on WBAI 30-some-odd years ago, I want you to know. With a host named Miles Kruger, who I just saw the other night. We used to have a program on late at night, and I was your audience as a kid.
So was I. I used to listen to BAI when I was a teen.
Yep, me too.
And that is a very great example of how important this radio station is.
There it is. 212-209-2950. And I have to tell you, you know, when I reached out to want to do something with Henry, they said, oh, Henry loves your station.
All right.
So there it is. So
that's absolutely not bull.
212-209-2950. $40 pledge. You can get a copy of Hollywood Dreams. We're talking live here with Henry Jaglom and Tana Frederick.
Live. Isn't that exciting? Even though we are in Los Angeles and you are in New York, I'm still of an age where I'm amazed by all the possibilities. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Still exciting to me.
You know, Henry, you kind of, you seem, I get like these inklings of, you know, Spalding Gray, who passed, but you seem, you like, I was very inspired by Spalding.
Yeah, I was too.
As well.
Spalding Gray is a great inspiration.
Great inspiration.
Because he took his own unique life and tried to, like, put it up there.
Yes.
And share it with people without coloring it one way or the other, and really trying to expose the complex truth of our beingness, of what our lives are, you know? And I think that's a wonderful gift that artists give you. I love performers for that reason, especially people who use their own lives or their own sense of life and share that with you in whatever ways, you know. Sondheim is a great example of that. I was in New York a couple of weeks ago and saw the revival of Sunday in the Park with George, and it's just the most extraordinary thing because Sondheim does that in his music all the time.
Well, you know, yeah.
Have you done any, I mean, do you do any, like, seminar teaching just off the, at any point, or are you too busy for that? Or
no, I don't, I really don't have much time for that, unfortunately, but from time to time a university or acting school or something like that calls me, and I love appearing before students, and, you know, and that's always a pleasure, sure.
Chris wants you to do a one-man show.
I mean, I just think just hearing you and just, you know, some pseudo documentary on you, or just something along that line.
Pseudo documentary.
Well, there is this very weird film which just came out on DVD called Who Is Henry Jaglom? And I, even though a lot of people say a lot of mean things about me, other people say some very nice things. And the only person you should believe is Candace Bergen, who actually says on the film, "If Henry Jaglom had been my husband or my father, I could have taken Poland." which is a great line if you think about it.
Yes, it is. Yes,
and
it is.
And that's the only one you should believe. But it did come out recently, and it, you know, people like to find out more about people like myself who make these kind of films, and I think that's great. I mean, I love it. I never mind. People are surprised that I send them who is Henry Jaglom, because there's a lot of people saying negative stuff. But you know, to me, that's all part of the same thing. It's like the game, you know. Some people love you, some people hate you. That's fascinating, the whole thing.
But you're very inspiring. You are truly, truly inspiring, and I just think that that's so important. I think that it's just, you know, I hope everyone listening tonight, I mean, I think you don't even know who you're affecting. Some, you know, 14-year-old, 15-year-old filmmaker in Brooklyn, some kids.
Who's listening to the radio. And to that 14 or 15-year-old filmmaker in Brooklyn, I want to specifically say, this is the best time for you, and there's only one thing you have to know, and that is not to believe anybody who tells you you can't do something. Not to ever accept the fact that you can't do something, and not to let anybody tell you that you have to do it the way it's been done before, because you don't. You can completely do it your own way, and that's why I add that the technology today makes it so wonderful that anybody can just go out with a little camera and make a little film and get it seen around the world. It's astonishing. Just put it online and get people to see your work. Get people to see what's going on in your brain. Just try to tell the truth. That's the job, to tell your truth.
Well, Henry Jaglom, I have to say it's been quite a pleasurable time. I hope you've enjoyed being here.
Me too, very much so, yeah.
And we've thoroughly enjoyed having Tana here. And
she's isn't she?
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, she'll come into the studio when you're in New York.
We will. I promise you we'll do that. And you'll see toward the end of the year, Irene in Time, which will be out in the theater.
Right, well, hopefully you'll be out here promoting and you'll come on our show.
We will come on your show for sure.
All right, well, thank you, Henry. And
what a pleasure, all three of you. Thank you very, very much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, and you want to put Tana on for a sec?
Yes, Tana is wonderful.
And then you can just go away.
Okay.
Don't listen.
Oh.
Hey, Tana.
Hi.
We just want to say thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you.
And thoroughly enjoyed having you and Henry on, and I can see why it's such a love fest between the two of you, because the two of you are like perfectly complement each other.
We really wish you the best.
And it shows up on film. You know, I have to say one thing about, you know, art. I think if it affects somebody, then it's good.
Yeah.
Whether you love it or hate it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, and Tana, once again, I have to say, and I was saying this to Henry before I had you on, you have this amazing balance of being able to be scarily neurotic and amazingly endearing. Like, on one moment, it's like, oh, my God, if she were near me, I'd hold up the cross. To the next moment, you're like, oh, I'd like to give her a hug right now. So,
oh, thank you.
So, and I do owe you a package.
Yes.
Yeah,
I can't wait to get that.
Yeah, I will send that out to you tomorrow.
Good luck.
But you're tuned to Listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. Tana Frederick, thank you for being here with us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me and Henry.
And I hope you'll come on with us again.
Oh, my gosh, you better have us on again.
All right, yeah. You know, I'll bring you on as a co-host, Tana.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't even know that was
Hey.
We're looking to get rid of Elena.
I only have one more article of clothing
well,
to take off.
Well, if Tana's on, if Tana's on, Elena, we'll give you one or two lines, okay?
This right, show is like strip poker. They just keep making me take things off.
Tana, thank you for being here.
Thanks so much.
And you'll be hearing from us very soon.
Okay, wonderful.
Okay.
Good night,
Henry.
You've tuned to Listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. Chris, are you still there?
Nobody touched nothing.
212-209-2950. Make your pledge. Thank you for those who have pledged. $40 pledge. You can get your copy of Hollywood Dreams.
And the book.
212-209-2950. $40 pledge. Hollywood Dreams by Henry Jaglom, starring Tana Frederick.
talking about it, and I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I know.
Consuelo, they're not human. Consuelo, they're not human. Night shift again. 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 Night shift again.
Don't be damn late.
I don't have to even tell you what that music is from, and unless you've been living under a rock, you know that the new Indiana Jones film is coming out this Friday. So, for two things and two reasons that I'm playing it. One is I saw the film, and I'm going to give you my review of the new Indiana Jones. And we are also, as for a pledge of $50, we have the final or the third volume of Young Indiana Jones, pretty much considered the best, and it is a 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 DVD set. Now let me tell you, $50 pledge, it's cheaper. That's cheaper than buying it in the store. Okay, so for a $50 pledge, you can get this volume 3, The Years of Change. And what's interesting about the Indiana Jones TV series, besides the fact that nobody watched it, is that all these amazing actors and writers and directors were working on it. Frank Darabont was working on it. All these people were, Daniel Craig was in it. All these people that you would never even think about, or who have all gone on to become huge stars and major directors and writers in their own right, all worked on this show. So it was a really well-produced show. And the other thing about it is that he made it historical. He's always meeting historical figures throughout the show, so there's a lot of reality mixed in. It's almost like a history lesson. And along with the DVD, or along with the episodes, which have been kind of re-edited into like mini movies, he's got all these extra documentaries. He's got 31 in-depth documentaries and interactive timeline and video games, that kind of thing. So it's 10 discs, over 26 hours of entertainment. So for a $50 pledge, you can get The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones, Year 3, The Years of Change.
Wow, so that's only for $50, Mike.
Huh? Only for $50. And, you know, Harrison Ford makes an appearance in one of those episodes. Now, here's the thing. I saw the new Indiana Jones, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. And here's the thing, you know, when the music comes on and the logo comes up and Lucasfilm comes up, what's interesting to see is that these, you know, I've gone to plenty of critic screenings, you know, and they're, you know, you know, they're all there. But it's like, you know, this is why you love movies. In our age, in our lifetime, and this is if you're anywhere between probably 30 and 45, in our lifetime, you know, these movies were the defining, you know, these were the blockbusters. These were the big movies of our time. These were the milestones of entertainment. And it's interesting, Steven Spielberg said in an interview that there's only a couple, he's made a lot of successful films, there's only a couple of films where you could just put a silhouette of the character up without any other image and everybody would know who it is. And Indiana Jones is one of those characters. So when he appears on the screen and it's Harrison Ford who, you know, the thing is, it's funny, I was watching, I just got a new HD deck and the up conversion to HD was always better than Blu-ray and I'm looking at testing out and putting on Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. And you look at Harrison Ford, he was clearly the breakout star from those, you know, but he's got such a likability. If you really look back at Han Solo, there was no character there, really.
It was
no character. It was just, you know, he was the mercenary. But it was really Harrison Ford that you liked. You know, you fell in love with these characters, you fell in love with Harrison Ford. And the thing about Harrison Ford is you just, there was a whole period, again, if you're, especially if you're a certain age, where you just, you know, it's another Harrison Ford movie. You know, there are some people who didn't really like Harrison Ford, but if you did, you know, you enjoyed his movies. But if not, even if you didn't like Harrison Ford, you had to like the Indiana Jones movies. They're still being copied today. We got The Mummy coming out. We just had another National Treasure. And so, I say all that to say, in the context, the cultural context of Indiana Jones, there's a lot of expectation. And I will say, it's thoroughly, thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable. It's great to see, you know, Harrison Ford back up on screen. He's 64. He looks great. He's in great shape. You know, he's a little older, a little grayer, a little, you know, just a little more jowly. But you know, he looks great. It's as much fun as you could possibly want it to be. It was great to see Karen Allen. He's surrounded by lots of great actors, good dialogue. It's fun. It's never going to recreate the experience of the first one. Because even the second or third, you always kind of forget. The second and third were successful, but they weren't super well received.
I like the second one.
Well, you see, a lot of people didn't like the second one, and now later on, it's seen as being underrated. And the third one was made more money than the second one.
I didn't like the third one.
Well, I did. Yeah, Sean Connery.
Didn't we go to all three of them back to back?
Please,
Mike?
Come on. I don't know if there was a showing. I know I did.
I mean, I don't know. We did. We held hands. No, we held hands.
I like the second one with the bridge and.
But you remember we started with the
I like them all. I know. I was there first day, first show, front row. But that was my whole thing.
Blah, blah, blah.
Well, the first, if we watched all three in a row, maybe, I don't remember that.
No, it wasn't the Ziegfeld.
And what
were
you guys on?
Los Astor Plaza. All right, yeah. I kind of remember that. But I do remember going to see the first one the first time. I knew about the movie, and I was with Mike Miller and Chris Griffin, and they wanted to go see Outland again. We'd already seen it. And I was like, no, let's go see Raiders of the Lost Ark. And they were like, But I forced them to go, and they went. And, of course, we all loved it. The rest is history. It was a great movie. And I actually went with Chris Griffin and my dad on Sunday to see it.
That's awesome.
So it was a lot of fun. You will definitely enjoy it. There'll be a smile on your face throughout. Lots of little homages and little, you know, not lots, but enough for you to, it acknowledges
Keep
the
going.
Other three films. He's a little older. Shia LaBeouf is not terrible. And it's fun. It's a lot of fun. And you're glad that they made another one. And you could easily sit through one more. You say, you know, make one more. And I think they are. I think George Lucas is going to make a fifth one now where they hand it off to Shia LaBeouf. But there it is.
You think he can handle
Indiana
it?
Indiana Jones. So, we've only got five. Yeah. We've only got five of these, okay?
So it's first come, first serve.
The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones, Volume 3, $50 pledge, 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950, $50 pledge. And
we
you
only
can get
have five.
Adventures of Young Indiana Jones just came out. That's right. 10 discs over 26 hours of entertainment. We have five copies.
And at this point, I bet no one can get it.
212-209-2950. What?
Elena?
Me?
Did you get Did you get the thing?
No, I didn't get the thing.
Oh, wow. Look at that, Elena. How lame, huh? He didn't send it to you.
You know, wait a second. I sent it.
No, actually, I didn't get anything.
It went into the void.
You've got to be kidding me.
209.
No, are you sure you have my right address?
You guys need to have this offline. Elena, you need to bring back Max's Twilight Zone thing.
It's broken.
Did you tell him?
Like what happened to that?
Did you tell him that you broke it?
No.
You better tell him. 212-209-2950. That was a collector's item worth hundreds of dollars on eBay. So, yeah, you can take that one. Do you want to see Hollywood Dreams there, Elena?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
No, see, look, I have the little keychain, but I don't have the TV.
212-209-295. You had attached it to your bag and then lost it?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's...
Elena, did you get... Can it not fit in your box?
Your package?
She doesn't have a box.
Yeah, because if it couldn't fit in your mailbox, did you get a notice to go pick it up?
No, I get a notice, but I didn't get a notice.
Well, there it is, Chris. You shouldn't have sent it Pony Express.
No, I sent it, like, the day after I talked to her.
209-2925.
It's upsetting to me.
2950. People are... $50 pledge, you can get... Chris, try and stay focused. We're trying to raise money for the station.
I'm sorry.
212-209-2950.
No, thank you, Chris. We'll talk about it.
The Adventures of Young Indiana Jones, Volume 3, with all kinds, over 24 riveting in-depth documentaries, 15 hours of special features from George Lucas, creator of Indiana Jones. 212-209-2950 for a $50 pledge. You can get a copy of Young Indiana Jones, Volume 3, 10 DVD set. It's only $50, less than what it costs in the stores, for a pledge and support WBA at the same time. Or for a $40 pledge, you can still get your copy of Hollywood Dreams, the movie you heard us talking about for the last
time. And a book.
And a book, Hollywood Dreams. 212-209-2950. So please, please, make your pledge now. We've got about 5 more minutes before Tony Short comes in. 212-209-2950. I have another DVD, but I only have a couple minutes left. It's also for a $40 pledge. I have Cloverfield. Anybody wants Cloverfield? I have 5 copies of Cloverfield for a $40 pledge, too. So you can get Cloverfield for $40, Indiana Jones for $50, or Hollywood Dreams for...
40 plus a book.
I should have done like all 3 for like $100, but I didn't. 212.
Because you're dumb.
209-2950. Make your pledge now. You know, it's amazing, John Williams. Like, he was just unstoppable for like throughout like the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It was like, okay, if there's a blockbuster, it's John Williams. Star Wars, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Harry Potter. It's like you just can't stop John Williams. And then he just went Oscar after Oscar after Oscar. Until he was usurped by Disney. 212-209-2950 for a $50 pledge.
Away.
You can get your copy of Young Indiana Jones, or for a $40 pledge, you can get either Cloverfield or Hollywood Dreams. Call now. 212-209-2950. I don't know if anybody else is there. Elena will go back and take your call. Elena, you want to go back and take call?
I do.
I think, well, I don't know. People like
to... Sure, I'll go take.
Seem to want to take what?
To get that Indiana Jones.
That's right.
If
they got.
Nobody gets it, I'm gonna
play. That's right. $40. Look at that. That's cheaper than if you go and buy it.
All right,
Young
I'll go
Indiana
in the back.
Jones. It's got so much to it. If you're an Indiana Jones fan or if you're a history buff, you will love this. This you could literally be watching for a week and not have to turn on anything else. Over 26 hours of entertainment. Isn't that pretty amazing, Max?
What does he mean? Somebody bit more than it. Just fascinated me when I read about this.
What?
Oh, one of the people he runs into.
He runs into so many. He runs into everybody. And he even mentions it in the new film. They mention some of the stuff that only happened in the Young Indiana Jones. I think he runs into Al Capone, Louis Armstrong, all these people.
Oh,
John
that's
Ford.
Right. Yeah, some jazz people.
Yes, Dracula. He meets everybody. Jazz people. 212. And then there are all these documentaries on the real people on here. 212-209-2950. For a $50 pledge, you can get right now Young Indiana Jones. Just here, just now. That's it. We only have 5 copies. Get it, or Max is going to pledge and take it himself. 212-209-2950. $40 pledge, you can get Hollywood Dreams or Cloverfield. New secrets revealed. Declassified new footage and special features. 212-209-2950. Tony Short is here, so you've got less than 2 minutes to get it. Call now, 212-209-2950. Once I'm out of here, that's it. You can't get these films anywhere for this price and support WBA at the same time. Tony Short is coming in right now. She's got an amazing show plan, but it has nothing to do with what's happening now. 212-209-2950. This is Night Shift, and you can visit us on the web at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. That's lifeislikesciencefiction.com. You can hear shows going back till May of last year and all kinds of other goodies. Life is like science fiction. Or you can email us at niteshiftz@aol.com. Or you can leave us a message, 212-209-2950. That's the Night Shift hotline. So make your last pledge, 212-209-2950. Until then, Chris?
Yes.
I'll call you after the show.
Next week, everybody.
Remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.